Hello, everyone. It is the final word show. I'm Dan Club. That's John Machin. Ian Young is over there. We're here to talk about Everton 2, Liverpool 0, unfortunately. We're going to talk about the game, what it means in the bigger picture, and all that terrible, terrible stuff, quite frankly. Jack in the Discord straight away says, is the final word today just a therapy session? Pretty much, Jack. Pretty much. We'll do our best to make us all feel ever so slightly better about it all, if that's possible. Okay. Without further ado, I've held it off long enough, all the 30 seconds. Let's do it. Line up then, first and foremost, gentlemen. John? Yeah, enforced changes, of course, from the weekend with Jota injured, Cody Gakpo on husband stroke partner duty, away with his wife. But defensively, Ibu Konate comes in for Joel Kwanzaa. The whole midfield changes as well. McAllister, Szoboszlai, Jones come into it. Endo, Elliott, Gravenberch out. Fourth, a lot of people have been saying, you know, we found the winning formula at the weekend at Fulham, one of our better performances for a while. Why change it? Are you in that camp?
I wasn't really. I mean, for me, that was our first choice 11. Apart from Endo, you make a choice to... I think he made a choice that he wanted to attack, and therefore he left Endo out, and he had Szoboszlai in, and Jones and McAllister lying a bit deeper. I just thought that's his first 11. That he's gone to that team regularly over the season, and he thinks that front three is his top three. Mm. I don't think Jota would have played from the start. Not least because, apart from that, injuries picked up now. He has had niggles since he came back from injury. Gakpo was never going to start, even though he's probably been our best forward over the last couple of games. So that was the team I expected to play. And I look at it now and think, oh my God, that's our first choice.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Yeah. I mean, Ian, are you in a similar camp to John there? I'll be honest with you. I think midfield-wise, I'd probably inclined to agree. I think Curtis Jones was probably the one question mark for me in amongst that. I probably would have had Wataru Endo starting over him with McAllister further forwards. But I said it on our match preview show in the build-up. I felt like Cody Gakpo was undroppable. Now, obviously, unforeseen circumstances in terms of what he had to go and deal with, of course, and hopefully, fingers crossed, all is well with that. Touch wood. But were you in a similar camp? Would that have been your front three for this one?
No. I was very much... We've been struggling for performances and results, and we put a formula together that had won on Sunday, and especially with the midfield. I think our midfield struggled since the international break. I think a lot of it is down to confidence, and like I was saying before to Chris, that it was no coincidence to me that the three guys that scored on Sunday were people who that haven't been in the team. Mm. Gravenberch came in and scored, Jota scored, and Trent scored. So I personally would have gone, maybe not the full 11, but I would have gone with the midfield three that we played on Sunday, just because we seemed to create more, and seemed to be a bit more fluidity there. I've been banging the Elliott drum for most of the season. I think Elliott, I know he's not big, I know he's not quick, but he has a bit of incision that a lot of the midfielders don't seem to have at the moment. They've got the capabilities of doing it, but they've just not been doing it.
You do have to wonder why Harvey Elliott doesn't get more of a chance. When you look at the performances, say, of Szoboszlai since his injury, he's just not been on it at all, has he? No. Jones is still not back up to speed. To be honest, Bobby Clark probably would have been a better bet than either of them last night, to be honest, because of the energy and, you know, there was nothing there in our midfield at all.
No, I mean, it certainly looks like that. And obviously, we're talking here with the benefit of hindsight. But I guess some of these big name players, in inverted commas, were dropped for all intents and purposes a weekend. Whether Klopp framed it to them as being dropped or just squad management rotation is a different question altogether. But from the outside looking in, it certainly looked as though Klopp was sending some messages at Fulham with the likes of the people, Mo Salah, obviously Darwin Nunez, McAllister a little bit, certainly Dom Szoboszlai falls into this category. So I guess then, John, just on that, like to round off on the lineup, like if he is picking players on form, not just reputation necessarily, that last night felt like more of a selection based on reputation, even with sort of the caveat of obviously Jota's injury and Gakpo's absence. Like, he has picked those players based on the fact that on paper, that feel like our best 11, not necessarily in form.
As I said just before, I think he thinks that's his first choice 11.
I agree.
Apart from maybe Endo, you know, depending on what game you're playing at. And personally, you know, a derby game, I would have had Endo starting, you know, every day of the week, you know. And McAllister, I think, is far more creative when he's further forward. Yeah. So what was the point of leaving Endo out? I didn't get that at all. But I do actually think he thinks that's his first choice 11. And I think that forward line, I think that's Klopp's go-to three. Although you have to wonder why these days, because they just don't score goals.
You might need to revisit that train of thought, to be honest. Well, maybe not, because you've got four games left, of course. Anyway, let's dive into the actual game then, Ian. The start, listen, I think the start was actually okay. We've started games worse this season, I think it's fair to say. We had a couple of moments in the opening exchanges, bit 50-50, but I guess we expected that, because whatever you think of Everton and their current sort of guys, like when you go into a derby, certainly Goodison Park, you're going to expect a raucous opening 10-15 minutes, and we got it, and Everton were at it. They posed a threat. Obviously, the first big major talking point was the offside penalty. But yeah, we gave that, in particular, that incident gave Goodison something to really get behind and a bit of momentum, and I don't think Liverpool really responded particularly brilliantly to that.
No, I just think Everton would have fought it more. I thought that maybe with the result they got the weekend that they may have not been at it as much, because they didn't need the points. They probably didn't need the points.
They weren't as desperate. Yeah.
So, but they came out of it like they needed. They were willing to kill last night. Everton, when they came out, they just wanted it more. And you could see that from the moment the whistle went. I think Rooney said at some point, Liverpool looked shocked yesterday. Mm. I thought he looked really shocked.
Do you go along with that, John? Do you think they wanted it more?
I think they played a derby game and we played a Premier League game.
I think that
was the difference. The passion was all on Everton's side and not on ours. And I think the referee didn't help us, because he kept giving them soft free kicks.
Yeah, I agree.
And that was put us under a lot of pressure, because that's their game, you know, free kicks and you know, set pieces.
Yeah.
That's where they caused the damage. And that's clearly what they did last night to us. But I do think the difference in passion was really evident, stark.
Okay, that's interesting. I want to pull on that thread a little bit more in a moment. But before I do, John mentions free kicks. And rightfully so. But we didn't wise up to it. We played into their hands, if anything, by not being street smart. Because he's right, a lot of the free kicks were very soft, you know, and they just felt like the slightest bit of contact, away they go, and the ref was buying it every single time. But Liverpool need to learn and learn quickly, because Everton are playing for that. And if the ref's going to fall for it every single time, we just can't give him a choice to make or the options to give a free kick. And we weren't doing. The one that actually comes when the goal comes from it, that's soft. But again, we get too tight and we give the ref a decision to make. It's daft for Liverpool, but it's naive.
It's down to Liverpool not knowing what to do. Like I said, because they were shocked in the way Everton came out the blocks, it was like our heads looked frazzled. And a lot of our challenges as well were made with arms and hands rather than going in with our feet. Once you start putting your hands on players, you give them the license to go down and get a free kick.
I think, again, it's down to the fact that we were trying to play football. You know, some of the contact from us was about winning the ball rather than about, you know, winning the challenge. And I think because of that, they were giving away really stupid free kicks, because there was hardly any contact at all. And it would have been much better if they just got stuck in like Everton were doing. You know?
Well, just on that then, I'll pick up where we left off a moment ago then. Because I said in the build-up to the game, I think it was on the build-up show, actually, you have to earn the right to play football. And that felt like a team that did have playing football in mind. It's got the creative midfield in there and all that sort of stuff. Maybe a bit less combative than if you'd have had Obataro Endo. But in any game, you have to earn that right. You have to earn the ability to get the ball down and play. Your first fundamentals are win your individual battles, win your fights, and away you go from there. And John, it clearly sounds like, from what we've all kind of said so far, that Liverpool didn't do that. Everton won the majority of the battles across the pitch.
Absolutely. I mean, Curtis Jones looked shocked at the free kicks that were being given against him, because he was standing up, he was just trying to win the ball, and there was no real power in there at all. And you know, I mean, if the referee's going to start giving free kicks like that, then you have to change your approach, right?
Yeah. Ian, on that then, like, said it there, not winning battles is relatively unforgivable. Like, we're going to talk loads more in detail about missing chances and some of the individual moments across the game, but if you go into a derby game and lose at your 50-50s more often than not, that's a poor starting point.
Well, there's a saying in football is you don't play the occasion. I don't think Liverpool played the occasion enough last night. I don't think they were ready for a derby match last night. I think they were ready for something else. They were ready for they wanted like an extra 5 seconds on the ball, which you're never going to get at Goodison. They wanted far too much time when they had the ball, and they weren't getting to the Everton players quick enough for me last night.
Okay. Sound. On to the goal. Mentioned it a moment ago. For me, the free kick, probably the softest of the lot, to be honest with you, but it gets given, and Liverpool have to deal with it defensively, and we don't. A couple of chances to clear our lines, fail to take any of them. I mean, the goal, John, is as scrappy as you like. It breaks about 5 different times, and ultimately ends up in the back of the net.
I think it was a very unlucky goal, really, to be honest. I mean, at one point, Robbo charges down a shot, which was brilliant. It hits Curtis Jones on the leg, bounces, hits Konate on the leg, meaning that McAllister, who was just set to clear the ball, totally misses the ball altogether. And it goes straight to Branthwaite, who has a shot and goes under
Allison.
You know, under Allison. I mean, there were opportunities for us to clear, which weren't taken, but... You know, I mean, they rode their luck immensely in the whole business.
Really. Yeah, I mean, they bought a ticket, didn't they, in terms of, and we mentioned it a moment ago, in terms of they wanted set pieces, all that, and they won, you know, the majority of the first balls and second balls in some instances as well, and this was just another one of them. Liverpool being unable to actually deal with the situation, and obviously it cost us dearly. Do you apportion any blame to anyone in particular, or is it just one of them things?
It was just one of them goals. I said before, it felt like a goal that would normally get scored like a 92nd minute where players are out on the feet and the swinging from balls and missing
Keystone Cop stuff.
It was pinballing around the penalty area, wasn't it? It's just one. You can see them, don't they? They happen through. Not like I said, normally they happen in the 92nd minute, and not when it did like last night. But I tend to agree.
Right, let's move on then to three talking points, really, and it's all centering around the similar sort of topic, and unfortunately it's been a topic for quite some time now, it's felt like, certainly since the last international break. Chances and wastefulness in front of goal. We'll begin with Darwin Núñez's chance, and I think the problem of last night, and we've just kind of touched upon it with the goal we conceded, of course, and it was kind of both boxes, both final thirds, if you like, pouring one and pouring the other. In the middle, sometimes it was decent, as much as we can, you know, talk about the midfield in the greater depth, and it wasn't always at it. It lost a lot of battles, 100%, but in terms of football, it was nice at times, and some of the build-up play was really nice, and the build-up play for this Darwin Núñez chance is really nice. But John, I'll come to you on it. Like, a lot of people are talking Darwin Núñez, not just in the aftermath of last night, but recent weeks as well. I mean, I've written it in the agenda here. He has to score that for me. The lack of composure he shows, it's just, he sees the white to the goalpost and thinks, hard as I can, let's see what happens. You need to be a bit better than that.
Yeah, his go-to position these days seems to be hit it as hard as you can and it should go in, and of course 9 times out of 10 it doesn't, because you need a bit more subtlety than that. I mean, it's very difficult not to come to the conclusion that the guy will never score a lot of goals. I mean, he's had 2 seasons now with everyone saying, oh, he'll come good, but he's not coming good. He's missing far too many chances. I mean, last year and the year before, people were moaning that Bobby Firmino wasn't scoring goals. But in a situation like that, that would have been in the net from Bobby Firmino, because he wouldn't have missed. You know, Mane wouldn't have missed. And unfortunately, he's going to score maybe a dozen goals a season on a regular basis, and that's not really good enough, unless you've got a 30-goal-a-season guy next to him. And Mo Salah at the moment isn't a 30-goal-a-man, is he, either?
You know, no, that's it. You do need someone to compensate for... If he isn't going to be putting the numbers you just mentioned there, absolutely, yeah. And I think Diaz falls into a similar category. We're going to talk about him more in a moment. But the thing is, as well, if you are getting sort of 12 to 15 within that sort of region, like Bobby Firmino often did, but we all know what Bobby Firmino brought to the party as well. And Darwin Núñez, as good as he has been this season in times in certain games, I think his all-round game has definitely improved. Not right now, it doesn't feel like we're getting much else from him either. But Bobby Firmino is just the orchestrator of everything that went on around him. Darwin Núñez isn't that guy, so his numbers have to be better.
You'd have to say, if you think about his contribution to last night's game, I can't think of anything.
Well, it was non-existent, essentially. Yeah. It was, and the one big moment he has, Ian, he gets it all wrong. I mean, get it all wrong might be a tiny bit harsh, but again, I'll come back to it. You have to score that. You can't... People say, oh, Pickford's done well. He hasn't. He's smashed it straight at him. Pickford shouldn't have a chance of saving that, but Darwin Núñez gives him every possible chance.
Well, I defended him last night when he missed it, and the more I see it, I'm like, I'm not sure what he's trying to do. I was like, is he trying to put it through his legs there? I defend Darwin Núñez all the time, because he does offer more in general, game-wise, right throughout the game, but I think since the international break, he's had no effect on the game either. So if he's not scoring goals, he's not affecting the game, then it makes it really, really difficult to defend
him. What are you defending him?
Like I said, most of the season he's been very good with the way he's affected the game. But I just think the whole team, Darwin included, is in a really bad place confidence-wise. It just seems like the snatching of chances, the final ball seems rushed, the taking too long on the ball, the confidence just seems shot out a lot of them.
Yeah, it does. And again, that was definitely evident last night. Decision making in the final third was left wanting too often, and the execution of the decision was sometimes awry as well. Next chance for Luis Diaz. I don't want to spend too long dwelling on that one because I think it's a bit more difficult. Listen, he probably should score, if truth be told. Certainly like him to score, but it's harder than the Nunes under football in the round. That was really nice, actually. Playing head tennis, essentially 1-2 head tennis. It was a joy to watch until Diaz's finish was left wanting a little bit. We're going to do a big bit on Diaz later because I think it's worthwhile doing. You said it there, Ian, snatching at chances. That takes me nicely onto Mohamed Salah, who has two in quick succession, John, and this actually stems from a really poor Darwin Nunes touch, actually. It's a lovely ball into his feet, I think it's from Trent. Nunes gets the touch all wrong, but with Salah, again, it's similar to the Nunes conversation, like his all-round game is miles off it at the moment, and neither of these chances are as big as the Nunes one. They're not gilt-edged, but he makes a real mess of both. He snatches at the first one, it's a horrible shank, and then he blazes well over, and that's indicative of where Mohamed Salah is right now.
Yeah, I mean, the first one, it would have hit the corner flag if there hadn't been players in the way, and the next one, he's leaning back and it goes way over, doesn't it? It's not really Mo Salah-esque at all, is it? And he's very much in that what you said before about snatching at chances. He's snatching at a lot of things. And even his go-to attempts to the far corner just don't seem to happen anymore. He's going through a very rough... He has actually, since he came back from the African Cup of Nations, hasn't he? He got the injury. He's never been quite the same since. And it may well be that he wouldn't be until next season anyway now. He doesn't look as though he's going to get back that sharpness at all.
Salah has that chance as well that comes across, and he chooses to put it across the goal to pass it, whereas normally he put his foot right through and it had gone in the corner.
Yeah, and then we'd have moaned at him, though, wouldn't we, for trying.
That was good defending, that, Ben Godfrey, wasn't it? The reason I haven't really highlighted that one is because I think Salah might do the right thing. I think he genuinely makes the right decision there because it's Jones and Darwin Nunes converging on that.
And he does, but normally Mo Salah wouldn't do that.
More of a selfish.
Normally
go
in the corner.
Listen, your thought process might be right in terms of Salah's thought process, absolutely, yeah. But I actually think he might have done the right option
made
there.
Me think we were going to murder them.
I agree. Yeah.
It seemed easy, didn't it?
Really easy, and the football was really nice. It was fast-paced, it was with purpose, so yeah, I make you right, and there was definitely that element to it, but it was that final. But again, I do credit Ben Godfrey with really actually quite impressive defending there. Just on Salah more generally, and like John's just said it there, he hasn't been at it since the AFCON, essentially since the injury as well. I think it's an interesting conversation, really, and as listeners, a much wider conversation to have around Mo Salah in his future. Yeah. But just in terms of his performance now, I mentioned this briefly to Chris this morning, like, we are seeing a very similar level of performance that we've seen all season from Mo Salah in many ways. We've all kind of said, jovially at times, because we've been able to laugh at Salah's lack of quality displays because he's walked away with two goals and assists half the time. However, right now we're seeing a very similar all-round game, but without the same level of output. Is that the way you see it?
Yeah, it's sad, really, watching him. He looks like a shadow of the player we've had the past few years. I don't know whether it's a confidence thing. I don't know how this injury has affected him.
He's never been injured before.
Exactly. So it could be a mentality thing with him. When you go that long without a big injury and then all of a sudden you've got one, who knows what that does to a footballer?
Certainly a hamstring one, sorry. Yeah. With a player like Salah who relies, listen, he's not as quick as he was, and maybe that's an age thing or father time, or maybe it is the injury that sort of slowed him down a bit. But when you are so reliant on that quick burst of what you do, when you do a hamstring, that's got to be on your mind.
He's going to be unsure of himself, isn't he? Yeah. He's going to go, if I go for the burst of pace, is it going to go again?
And he came back at Brentford and he was out again, so maybe he came back too soon once, so who knows, that could be a factor. I think you're right, but again, I come back to it, I think all season by and large his actual all-round game has been just slightly off it, but again, he walked away with a couple of goals and assists, and we all go, isn't that funny?
His goal rate was way up there, he was still way up the top of the goal scoring charts, wasn't he, come New Year when he left.
But then when that stops, and then, this is what it looks like.
I think when he was scoring goals as well, there was a good connection between him and Darwin Nunes early in the season. playing like a bit of a partnership. But now the both of them are not at the races. That's not going to be there, so they're not helping each other out at all.
No, they definitely. They look to be sort of a real sort of telepathic understanding between the two of them. But as you say, neither of them are full of confidence right now. Quite the opposite, to be fair. And yeah, it's not pretty watching. Half time, no changes at the break. And I think, John, I'll ask you on this. I made that about right, albeit 1-0 down. The sort of the 10 minutes before half time were really encouraging from Liverpool point of view, and it felt like we had the momentum. So I wasn't massively surprised. Klopp kept it the same.
Well, I mean, we've grown used to being 1-0 down this season, haven't we? And you just assume we'll get better in the second half, and we'll the normality will be restored, but. It didn't work out that way, did it? Because, again, they brought passion to the table and we didn't.
Okay. Yeah, second half, my assessment is just meh at the moment on this agenda. But I thought Liverpool were in the ascendancy second half, in terms of possession at least. There was no clear-cut chances, I will say that. But we had lion's share of the ball and all that sort of stuff. But then in the first real attack from Everton leads to the goal. It comes from a poor Mo Salah touch on the halfway line. I think it's a McNeil shot. Alisson tips it over. And then literally, as the corner's about to be taken, that graphic comes up on the bottom of the screen. I think it's the first contacts from set pieces up until that point. Everton had won all five. And me and Steve kind of went, eyebrows raised here. There's a corner about to be delivered and we've just seen this stat. Lo and behold, pretty much a free header for Dominic Calvert-Lewin. And it's 2-0. I mean, of all the people, you can't give anyone a free header inside the box, certainly a six-yard box, but Dominic Calvert-Lewin, like, that is, once again, they used the word unforgivable.
Well, our most dominant player in the box, in both boxes, is Virgil van Dijk, and they worked him yesterday, didn't they? They kept blocking him above the corners. They'd obviously been working on that on the training ground, and they got it absolutely down to a T. And it's two big games for us this season where we've been done by set pieces like that. It was Man City at home and now Everton at Goodison. And for the team that's got the coaching staff that we have, it's a bit of a letdown. It's a bit poor, to be fair.
Well, it is alarming, John, because I don't think we've been watertight defensively, full stop, this season, but set pieces definitely seems like an area of concern. I know West Ham, thinking of the weekend. I know Everton exploit them really, really well. Hopefully West Ham don't as well. But listen, Liverpool just have to be better in those instances.
Yeah, I mean, I read an article, was it last week or so, about how Liverpool are getting into this data stuff about corners now, they can be improved and all the rest. I'm thinking, well, no evidence of that last night at all, was it? We're defending them really badly, and the ones we take are all rubbish. if you can't get it onto Van Dijk's head, then you're not getting it anywhere from Liverpool at the moment. Yeah. So, no, I mean, very disappointing. And of course, that goal was the one that changed the game rather than the first one. Because at 1-0, you always think, we'll still win this. 2-0 down at Goodison Park, everyone's, rabid by that stage. Yeah. You think, well, this is gone, hasn't it?
Yeah, it definitely had that feeling, I must admit. And it was only sort of exasperated by the fact that it did look pretty much at that point like we ran out of legs a little bit and ideas, and there was more aimless crosses getting hit into the box. I mean, every time we delivered any cross all night, I must admit, my inner monologue was going, what are we doing? Because they're gonna lap that up, They're built for that. That's what they want. It's Branthwaite, it's Tarkowski. They love aimless crosses into the box, and it was a little bit rinse and repeat really from Liverpool's point of view, Ian. I mean, the changes come, Elliot, Kwanzaa and Endo to begin with, but none of them affected the game. I mean, with Taro Endo, let's have it right, like, struggled massively
when he came on. He did. He came on and struggled. Elliot didn't turn up any trees, but he offered something different. He was doing passes from one side to the other, and he was trying to look for spaces for people, but we didn't seem to be making the runs either last night. Off the ball, or off the ball work was just as poor as our poor with the ball. It was a strange game. It was like, it might have been your inner monologue. It was my outer monologue. That's my little boy. All I did was shout last night. I was so frustrated last night.
Yeah, you used the word strange there, and that takes us nicely onto Gomez and Tsimikas coming on, John. I mean, I cannot make sense of that.
Well, I mean, Tsimikas, fine, because he can deliver a ball into the box. And I thought to myself, that's probably what that's about. Just a bit of quality crossing. Joe Gomez, again, it can only be that they don't think that Trent should be playing full 90 minutes again after coming back from injury. And therefore, it was a planned substitution before the game. And he stuck with it regardless of the situation that was actually on the pitch. That's the only logic I can think of.
Logically, that makes loads of sense, but Ian, I'm going to come to you for something less logical. Like, that's like for like, those changes. And the Trent thing is very much a fair point. He clearly isn't ready for 90 minutes yet. That's self-evident, really. But I was sat there thinking, okay, you got Jadon Danza. I know Klopp came out after the game and said, listen, Danza wasn't supposed to be with us tonight. It was meant to be Cody Gakpo in the squad, and obviously for reasons that we now know, he couldn't be. But you got Ryan Gravenberch there. Ryan Gravenberch, to me, albeit he has his attributes that are lacking in terms of being a Jurgen Klopp style midfielder, what he does have, he has the X factor. He can make things happen. He can get you on the front foot. Jadon Danza is still a bit of an unknown, and he gets himself in the box. He puts himself about a little bit. Like, if you're going to go for broke, go for broke. And like for like, fullback changes didn't feel like that.
No, we were getting a bit bullied last night by Brownsbait and our players. We're getting knocked all around the place. Now, one thing I've seen from Jadon Danza is whether he was ready to be playing or not, he would have put himself about either. Bars into Brandtwaite. I don't believe this line that they would have killed Jadon Danza. I don't think Danza would have allowed that to happen.
I thought maybe Gravenberch might have been swallowed up by it, because I don't think he's, I don't know, robust enough yet for that. I mean, I could be wrong on that, but Dan's definitely had to put him on.
The Simicast one, I can understand, because I thought Robertson's delivery last night was lacking, to say the least. I think he was pretty poor on that side of his game. So that was when Simicast came on, I sort of understood that. Like, yeah, he might get a decent cross into the box.
But, you know, putting him and Dan's on together
would have made more sense. Yeah, far too logical, you two, anyway. Now, on to an actual positive, would you believe it, before we come on to more negatives.
Really?
Genuine. And I'm sure you know the name I'm about to say here, John, Luis Diaz. I mentioned his missed chance earlier, and rightfully so, because it was a missed chance. But listen, for me, for my money, he's the only one to emerge with any real credit from last night. He essentially played in three positions across the front line all night long. And I honestly thought he was exceptional, not just in what he did on the ball and the quality he offered, but just the fact that he wanted the ball all night long. And it was telling that Klopp made a beeline for him when he came on and gave him a big hug, because he genuinely deserved it. I thought his effort, his endeavour was superb.
Yeah, I mean, I think he's been like that for quite a few games now. He may not always be our best player, but he's always up there in the top two or three of our players in any game. It's not that long ago since there were some fans saying we should be selling him, and I'm thinking to myself, you know, he'd be the last person I'd sell at the moment. You know, his skill is terrific. He uses it brilliantly. He gives everything, you know, the energy he puts into it. I mean, he was unlucky, he hit the post. I'm not too bothered about the chance that he missed. I don't think he could have got his body into a different position, because the ball came. Yeah. It was all one touch.
The way it was,
he was almost in the air when he hit it, wasn't he? Mm. I don't think he could have done a lot more with that, to be honest. But you know what? His all round game is. He deserves better, to be honest, than what he's getting around him at the moment.
Yeah, he certainly did last night. And you're absolutely spot on. You mentioned hitting the post there and the other chance he makes. But it was just his all-round work rate. And I'm sure inside they're all hurting, but it looked like outwardly he was the only one who was like, no, this can't be right. This can't happen. And he's done this a few times. I always hark back to the Crystal Palace game when Darwin Nunez got sent off, actually.
Yeah.
And Luis Diaz almost took that personally and went, no, this can't happen. And took the game by the scruff of the neck. And it felt like last night, Ian, that Diaz was the only one, really, who was going, we can't get beat at Goodison Park. It can't end like this. Ultimately, it does, because he can't do it all on his own, but he fucking tried.
He's been like that since the international break. He's been the one who's been trying to drag us through the mire, I think. He gets the ball, runs, and he tries to make things happen. And you can see him getting frustrated with the people around him. He'll pass the ball in, and the pass will be fine, and someone will miscontrol it. And his, I mean, sometimes this can be a negative, but you see him throwing his hands up going, what's going on? Why is this so hard? Why have we forgotten how to play football? Mm. You can see him getting as frustrated as us. I think he's probably the one who, since the international break, has been giving us sevens and eights rather than sixes and fives.
Mm. Yeah, no, absolutely. A couple of fours and threes knocking around last night. Okay, then. Listen, obviously, final Merseyside derby ends in defeat for Jurgen. Proper sad way to end his reign, because it does look like now, John, it's going to end with a little bit of a whimper. The title challenge certainly seems to have done so. Just a really terrible performance and not befitting. I feel like I've said this a few times about Liverpool and Klopp's Liverpool. Not befitting of the Liverpool side that he's built, really, as well, to go out in this way.
No, it's all a bit of a whimper, isn't it? You know, after all this heavy metal stuff just doesn't, you know, the sort of wheels have come off, never, you know, they don't seem to. I mean, you have to go back to that cup game at United, don't you, when they were totally in the ascendance, they were winning the game, then they get dragged into extra time, lose the game. They've never been the same since.
No.
You know, they went back to United and exactly the same thing happened again. They just seem to have run out of energy. They seem to have lost the knack of sticking the ball in the net when they've got possession.
Mm-hmm.
It's a bit bewildering, really, because we can still dominate, get 83% possession at one point last night, and we're still getting the ball in the net.
Yeah.
It's very worrying, really, because you're now going to finish Klopp's managerial reign. We're going into unknown territory, and we're doing it on the back of a whimper, really.
Yeah, it is. It's not far from ideal. Just on the Goodison Park stuff, Ian, and John mentioned Old Trafford as well. That's often been a talking point in around Klopp's tenure at Liverpool, because, listen, we've had some good results on the way at both of those grounds, but there has always been this mini mental block, it feels like, going to there. And sometimes it's felt like he's gone there with the idea of, let's just get a point and get out of there, which has worked on occasions, I think it's fair to say. But there's no two ways about it. Like, up against existing of those teams that are probably the worst in potentially our lifetime, really, Everton and Manchester United, we've never really sort of enjoy total, complete dominance going there, is that fair to say?
I think so, yeah. I just think it's surprising, really, when you go into emotional games like that, you'd expect the managers like Klopp, who are like super emotional, to come out on top, and it's just not been that way, has it, at all? I don't know whether it's a team talks before or whatever. It's just, I was looking at the record and I didn't realise how many draws have been at Goodison.
Those are nil-nils.
It's mental, isn't it? Especially when you look at the players that we've had on the pitch. We've had your Bobby Firmino's for years, and your Mane's and your Salah's and so many nil-nils.
Klopp, when he was talking about it in his press conference, was saying, well, it took him quite a while to get the emotion of the derby. For him, it was a football game.
Yeah.
And you look at Dyche last night in his first Everton derby, and he was clearly up for it. He knew all about the passion, and he was well involved in it. Mm. And I just think Klopp can't quite understand, you know, like derby games and the passion that's in them. He sees it all very clinically as football games. On paper, we should batter Everton and United every time we go anywhere near them.
Mm.
I mean, the 7-0, that's what, you know, us and United should be.
Yeah.
Even today, that if you put them on the pitch, that's what should happen every time.
Yeah, but it hasn't anywhere near enough.
And I think that, you know, the crowd get up, and, you know, their team gets up with the crowd, and you know, I think then, you know, all your tactics and your stuff go out the window.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Just on Jurgen Klopp in a little bit more detail, like, this isn't the time nor the place to sort of go into how incredible it's been to have Jurgen Klopp as our manager, so I'm not going to do that. But what I will say, Ian, I think last night was a reflection of this as well, certainly on the touchline, he does look a little bit done in. And I hate saying those words about Jurgen Klopp, because it's Jurgen Klopp and I absolutely adore the man. But there was definitely, I think I said, crestfallen is the word, and he just feels a bit like that. And I guess it's indicative of where we're at now as a team. We mentioned already going out of a bit of a whimper. He does look like a man who needs his break badly, doesn't he?
He does. And I've been like that since, I'd say, the Atlanta game when I first noticed it. That was like, yeah, I can see why he's going now. Like, I'm somebody who doesn't want him to go. I tweet every week, just stay. The man needs a break. He's absolutely, if you feel how we feel as supporters following this team, how must it be being the Liverpool manager dealing with this? Like, it's like a 24-hour-a-day, 7-day-a-week job, and it's all the time, constantly, and he doesn't get time to breathe. So God knows what he feels like, and I hope he gets the rest he deserves.
Yeah, without a shadow of a doubt, yeah. Before we look at the bigger picture in just a moment, I do just want to, a lot of the fallout, and we've alluded to it all on the way, John, of course, we have, has been around the front line in particular, and obviously the profligacy in front of goal and all that sort of stuff. I mean, we mentioned momentarily sort of the potential of people wanting to sell Diaz, some of his conversations about Darwin Nunez, Mohamed Salah's a bigger conversation here, Gakpo and Jota escape criticism, really, for their absence. But And where are you at with it all? Because is there a bigger conversation around the future of some of these people, or is it just like it's a moment in time, they're going to come good? Like, how do you sort of square this particular circle?
I think a lot depends on whether Salah stays and regains his form. Because obviously, you know, a 25 goals from him next season will calm a lot of nerves. I don't think Darwin Nunez is ever going to be a prolific goal scorer. I haven't watched him for two seasons. I just don't think it's there. Yeah. I personally would trade him in for a top-class goal scorer if you can find one. And of course, that's the problem, is they're not easy to find. Mm-hmm. Diaz, I think you keep him and, you know, if anything, you look to find players who can play with him.
Okay.
You know,
I said a moment ago, I answered the same question by all means, but I did say a moment ago Jota sort of escapes criticism because he was absent. Is that true? Or is the fact he was absent a problem in itself?
A few years ago, every season we started with, if we can keep Daniel Sturridge fit, we'll be okay. I feel like we're having them conversations with Jota about Jota now. I think it's like, and I understand a lot of his injuries are impact injuries, but there's only so many things that can be unlucky. There's only so many times we can have that conversation with, if Jota was fit.
He's made himself a great squad player,
yeah,
because of his injuries. Yes.
Not a great first choice because of that. You're probably right. Yeah,
he won't be on the pitch often enough.
Yeah,
and the others. But you mentioned Daniel Sturridge. I mean, you know, what would you give for someone like with the ability to put the ball in the net like him?
Yeah. Cool, calm, and collected one each.
Certainly was. Yeah, and that is. I almost hate the words I'm about to say. I have to stop myself. But that feels right now, everything Darwin Nunez isn't a little bit.
Yeah, absolutely. And me personally with Darwin Nunez, as I said before, I think he plays better from the left. And I think when he's playing on the left, it takes the pressure off him being a 25-year goal scorer.
And then we've got Gakpo who plays better from the left. And we've got Diaz who plays better from the left. I mean, I
like Gakpo as a centre, playing to the central as well. I thought when he came in last season, he was almost like a Bobby Firmino.
Well, I thought that's what they were going to do. They were going to, you know, convert him into a false nine, and that he would be perfect for that because he's got all the skills, intelligence, and he can shoot.
I still think that can happen.
They played him in every other position. I think that they've ruined him in many respects by not giving him
midfield part of it.
I think that's what's been wrong with Gakpo this season, because he was getting a lot of criticism at the start of the season. I was like, well, he comes in one game, he's playing on the left, then he's playing central, then he's playing midfield. You're not going to pick up any sort of confidence or any sort of momentum playing that way.
Yeah, I'm sure Klopp alluded to as much as well at some point on the way, because at one point it was like, oh, he's a victim of his own versatility, and then it kind of got to a point whereby, are you really versatile? And I think Josh Williams, we did deep dives with, basically said as much. He was like, are you versatile if you don't play well in any position? You know what I mean?
You're not versatile if you can play well there.
But I do think Gakpo is a very talented, very intelligent footballer who offers a lot, but you're right, at some point he does need to settle, or we need to settle on a set role for him, I think it's fair to say.
Only Slot will speak to him in Dutch.
Well, exactly, that isn't a thing. I've just thought of a question to ask you both, two questions, it's a double parter really. First off, I'll ask you, John, do you think we go into next season with the same set of attackers as this?
I hope not. As I said before, I hope we buy a proper centre forward.
Ian?
A goal scorer.
I think it needs freshening up, and I think that depends on what Salah wants to do, and it also depends on, we're hearing a lot of news about Diaz's dad talking to different clubs, so whether he wants to be at the club next season. If it's a Liverpool choice and a Liverpool fans choice, Diaz 100% stays, but sometimes it's not our choices and it's not Liverpool's choice. But I do think it needs a bit of freshening up. I think Dan's playing more will freshen things up next season as well.
Okay. You've answered both my questions in one, both of you there, so that's fine. It was, will we, and do you want, and you've absolutely nailed it. Look at that. Title done, gentlemen. Ian?
Well, we don't know who's going to win it yet, but it won't be us.
It'll be frustrating if City drop points tonight. So angering and frustrating if City drop points tonight.
Yeah. For you, John, not going to happen. Miracle needed.
I mean, Liverpool are way out of it now, but it's Hobson's choice, isn't it? I mean, I'd hate either of them to win. I think Liverpool are still the only club that's ever won a domestic trophy four times on the bounce, so I wouldn't like to see us trumped by City winning it four times.
And the other way around, just like, if City win it, no one will care.
Yeah, that is a thing. That is definitely a thing. And there's still the possibility to get stripped off them at some point in the future as well. So that'd be
very
pleasant.
Helpful of that.
Yeah. Fixtures wise, obviously we go to West Ham this Saturday. I mean, for Liverpool, let's just finish on this. Like, for Liverpool, four games to go. Like, I've seen people say, oh, will we get top four? Yes, it's probably the answer to that. But also, Ian, like, on a serious note, like, it is imperative now that we do end the season on a high, because it's been grim. It's been a grim few weeks. I think it's fair. Last night was about as grim as it gets, but hopefully that is the case. That has to be the lowest possible point of the season, doesn't it, really? It can't get worse. We have to regroup and pick up some points.
You've got a tough game going to West Ham away now, particularly after that performance. Yeah. And they're a very good team at times, West Ham. So you've got your work cut out there. And then, of course, you've got Tottenham as well coming. Very difficult.
Can I just go with the caveat? It's as grim as it was good at the start of the season, the first 6 or 7 months of the season.
Well, we'd only lost two games, and one of them wasn't really a loss.
We were absolutely brilliant all season, and I think maybe that's just caught up with us. Maybe the battling and the way we've played all season caught up with us, as horrible as this is now.
Yeah.
We're right up there now because of the way we played at the start of the season.
We're not far off, are we?
Yeah.
No, we're absolutely not far off now. A little bit of work. It's going to be a fascinating summer.
At the start of the season, no one thought we were challenging for the title.
Well, I alluded to this a couple of times last night. I think in the fullness of time, when we're allowed to sort of add perspective to our thought process, I think you're right. I think we will look back on this season as being fine, clearly not a success. I mean, you could class the Carabao Cup in a top four finish as success if you wanted to, but given where we were not a month ago and what was possible then, it's hard to sort of square that now and be like, oh yeah, this is all good. It's not all good. It's a little bit crap. But I think you're right. I think when we sort of look back over the summer, what we've done, it will be seen as okay.
Yeah, yeah.
I think the stuff that wasn't going on off the pitch was happening with our manager leaving and stuff like that.
It's heightened
everything. Just seems a little bit right down.
Losing Klopp has been a
it was never going to feel good losing Klopp anyway, was it?
No, it's made the lows lower and the highs higher along the way, hasn't it? Absolutely agree with you 100%. Sound okay. Final word done. I've said this a couple of times recently. May we never speak of that game again. hopefully that is the case for this one as well. Cheers, lads. Thank you very much. Thanks to Chris for producing as well. Great job. I think we might have been off air for the past half an hour. I've got no idea.
We'll be asleep.
Yeah, I've got no idea. I'm sure everything's fine. I'll speak and see you all again very soon. Take it easy.